Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, Rahugana, converses with Jad Bharata. When Abhantar in Canto 4, not here, Cologne, 5. Keep jumping
more
around.
More,
more advanced, right? Okay. So this is text number 12 this morning. Rahu gana etat tapasa na yati na chejasya, excuse me, chejaya nirvapanna grihat va na chandasa naiva jalagni suryair vina mahat para rajo abhishekam rahu ganaitat tapasa nayati na chejaya nirvapanad grihadva na chandasa naiva jalagni suryaya vina mahatpara rajo bhishekam Rahu ganata tapasa nayati na chejaya nirvapanad grihadva na chandasa naiva jalagni suryair vina mahatpara rajo pishik Rahu ganai tattapasa nayati na chejaya nirvapanat grihadva na chandasa naiva jalagni suryair vina mahatpara rajo bhishekam
vina mahatpara rajo bhishekam rahu ganai tattapasa nayati
rahu ganai tattapasa nayati
Jaya
Nirvana Kriyatva
Chandasa
Naiva Jalagni Suryaya
Vina
Mahatpara Rajo Bhishekam
Rahu Ganata Tarasanayati Rahu
Jaya nirvapanat grihadva
chandasa naiva jalagni suryaya
chandasa naiva jalagni suryaya
mahatpara rajo bhishekam
vina mahatpara rajo bhishekam
rahu ganai tattapasa nayati
rahu ganai tattapasa nayati
Jaya
Nirvapanat Grihadva Kinchetam.
Ladies.
Rahu Ganaita Tapasa Nayati.
Rahu
Ganaita Tapasa Nayati.
Chandasana eva jalagni suryaya.
Inamat padara jyotishekam.
Rahu ganaita tapasana yati.
Nayati
does not become revealed.
Na,
not.
Cha,
and.
Ijaya,
by a great arrangement for worshipping the deity.
Nirvapanat,
nor from finishing all material duties, and accepting sannyas.
Brihat,
from ideal householder life.
Va,
or.
Na,
nor.
Chandasa,
by observing celibacy or studying Vedic literature.
Na
eva,
nor.
Jala,
agni,
suryai,
by severe austerities
such as keeping oneself in water
or in a burning fire,
or in the scorching sun.
Vina,
without.
Mahat,
of the great devotees.
Pararajaha,
the dust of the lotus feet.
Abhishekam,
smearing all over the body.
Translation.
Of course, this is Jadvarta speaking to Maharaj Rahugana. My dear King Rahugana, unless one has had the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees, one cannot realize the absolute truth. One cannot realize the absolute truth simply by observing celibacy, that is to say, brahmacharya, strictly following the rules and regulations of household life, leaving home as a vanaprastha, accepting sannyas,
or undergoing severe penances in winter by keeping oneself submerged in water, or surrounding oneself in summer by fire and scorching heat of the sun. There are many other processes to understand the Absolute Truth, but the Absolute Truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. Srila Prabhupada's purport: actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau. One cannot attain the perfection of spiritual life simply by following the directions of the Vedas. One has to approach a pure devotee. Anya abhilasita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam. By the grace of such a devotee, one can understand the Absolute Truth, Krishna, and one's relationship with him. A materialistic person sometimes thinks that simply by executing pious activities and remaining at home, one can understand the Absolute Truth. That is denied in this verse. Nor can one understand the Absolute Truth simply by observing the rules and regulations of brahmacharya, celibacy. One only has to serve the pure devotee. That will help one to understand the Absolute Truth without fail. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutare Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nivishesha Sunyavari Paschachade Sutarane Omangyanam Timaranda Shaganamjana Shalakaya Chaksur Un Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpatribhyas Chakripa Sindhu Bheva Chapatitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So in this chapter, Maharaj Mahugana has asked Jadbar to make his teachings further clear to him. So in the previous verse, Jadbar has described the Absolute Truth as basically as Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan. This Vasudeva is the ultimate or the highest realization of the Absolute Truth. So now he says, O Rahugana Etat. Now, to understand, O King Rahugana, this knowledge, what I've just described to you, realization of the Absolute Truth. And Prabhupada says actual knowledge or realized knowledge. That means not just that you hear some theory, but you actually have experience, a direct perception. This is called Paresh Anubhava in the Bhagavatam, direct experience of the Lord. How do you get this? Well, he says, tapasa na yati, it does not come from austerity. That was the first thing. Tapasa na yati. Nacha ijaya, nor by worship. Prabhupada says, the word ija means just worship, deity worship. But maybe you really throw yourself into it. This is the thing. Deity worship will do it. Therefore, great arrangements for worshiping the deity. Lots of money, big temple, gold and silver paraphernalia. This is how. Nope. It says won't work. neither nor nirvapanat, from finishing all material duties and accepting sannyas by this vanaprastha and sannyas arrangement. Nope, that won't do it. Oh, well, what about Grihat? What about Griha? Would I stay and become an ideal householder? Nope. Won't work either. At this point, you may be getting a little frustrated. Because all these things are given in the Vedas and so on as practices, but he says, no, nor by Chandasa. You get two meanings here. The Vedic literature observing the vow of brahmachari that's taken when one studies the Veda. To study the Vedic literature means you enter into an ashram of a spiritual master while you're a brahmachari, and then studying the Vedic literature. So both of those things, that's not, won't do it either. Nor either, and then he has this list, water, fire, and sun, jala, agni, and surya. None of those things. So this refers to these really severe penances that people perform in order to attain knowledge of the absolute. Jala means water. As so Prabhupada says here, in the winter time when the water is really cold, you have these glacial streams coming off of the Himalayan ice, and you put yourself in the water in the winter time, that we've seen, jala, agni and surya, fire and sun. This I saw around circumambulating Govardhan Hill, and there was a field, and it was in the midday, it was very hot, and so this, there were several persons actually sitting with just kopina on, and practically naked, and all around them there were fires, and then the scorching Indian sun that was overhead. So I saw that one happening. So that's a practice. He says, nope, won't work either. So you're beginning to wonder, whoa, what's left? And then he says, they won't work, at least if there is not this necessary ingredient, Mahat, the great devotees. Padaraja, the dust of their feet. Abhishek, you have to take an Abhishek in that dust. So Prabhupada says, smear all over your body. Abhishek means complete bath that consecrates or dedicates oneself. So this is what is necessary. So Prabhupada translates this, and then he adds in the translation, there are many other processes to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of the great devotee. Now this sounds a little radical, but Prabhupada in the purport backs it up, quotes the Brahma Samhita, Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto, unattainable by the Vedas. The knowledge of Govinda, very, very, very hard to understand simply by either studying the Vedas or following the processes of the Vedas, but adurlabham atma bhakto, but not difficult by pure devotion of the soul. Not difficult. Here this refers to, of course, to the process of bhakti, especially. But we also know that bhakti begins by approaching the spiritual master. That bhakti comes, the givers of bhakti are devotees. You do not get it anywhere else except from devotees. One has to approach a pure devotee, anya abhilasita shunyam jnana karma diyanavritam. One who has given up jnana and karma. Jnana and karma taught in the Vedas, he's given that up. And is free from all extraneous desires except for that of the service of Krishna. So one who has done that, that's what, so Srila Prabhupada is defining what we mean by a mahat, a great soul, one who has accepted this path. Also Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, mahatmana tumam partas dairam prakritam ashritah, has taken complete shelter of the internal potency. That means is conducted solely by the order of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Nothing else is the impetus for action. By the grace of such a devotee, one can understand the absolute truth. So here's this idea that one needs something called grace or mercy. And what is that mercy? By the way, this Prabhupada quotes this verse a number of times, and it's cited also in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where there's a whole series of statements like this. I think I have it here in the repository of all knowledge. Database. Yeah. This is where Chit Mahaprabhu is explaining the process of devotional service. And he quotes this verse here. He says in Bengali, Mahat Kripa, without the mercy of the Mahats, the great devotees, unless one is favored by a pure devotee, one cannot attain the platform of devotional service. To say nothing of Krishna bhakti, one cannot even be released from the bondage of material existence. This is a little even more radical. And then and the purport to that, Prabhupada quotes this, mahatmanastumam parta daivam prakritam ashritah, defining what we mean, actually. It was those who are under the protection or have taken shelter of this daivam prakriti, the internal potency. They are engaged in devotional service. Ananya manasaha. This ananya manasaha, ananya chetasaha, this appears many times in the Bhagavad Gita. That is to say, with undeviating mind, the consciousness being fixed on Krishna does not go anywhere else. Because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they know Krishna as the Supreme Lord, original and unexhaustible. Then Mahaprabhu quotes this verse that we just reading today. And then he quotes another verse, which was spoken by Prahlad Maharaj to his father. Naisham vatistavat urukramangrim sprishat yanatar pagamo yarartaha mahiyasam para rajo abhishekam. See, here's the same phrase in this verse, para rajaha abhishekam. So Prahlad Maharaj also uses this phrase, the abhishek in the dust from the feet of great devotees. Niskinchananam na vinita yavat. Unless human society accepts the dust of the lotus feet of great mahatmas, devotees who have nothing to do with material possessions, mankind cannot turn its attention to the lotus feet of Krishna. Those lotus feet vanquish all unwanted, miserable conditions of material life. This is Prahlad in the Bhagavatam. Prahlad speaks of this, and this is the answer to his father, who wants to know how you became a devotee. He called his teachers and, "Did you teach him this?" "No." "Well, how did you become a devotee?" he asked his father. So this is his answer, referring, without naming him, to Narad Muni. That's how it happened. This is what he said, right here. His answer was, "Unless one attains this, well, unless one has this dust, takes this abhishek in this kind of dust, then that's the only way you can turn your attention to the feet of the Supreme Lord." He says, "Yeah." And Mahaprabhu says, "The verdict of all revealed scriptures is that by even a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all success. Sadhu sangha sarva shastra koi. Lava matra sadhu sanghe sarva siddhi hoi. All perfection comes from the mere lava, which Prabhupada says 1/11th of a second. By 1/11th of a second of sadhu sangha, all shastras say, it has to be an attentive 11th of a second. Then he quotes another verse from the Bhagavatam. This is early on, 1:18:13. Tuliyama lavenapi na swargam na purna bhavan bhagavat sangha sangasya martyanam kim utashishaha. The value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets or liberation from matter, but to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death. Here, the sages at Namishivanya Forest are expressing their delight in getting the association of Suta Goswami, so they can stop doing their sacrifices and can just get his association. So there's some of the statements like this. Now, how are we to understand how they are true, and what does it mean? Because sometimes this may seem like, oh, all you have to do is somehow or other get some mercy. It's a done deal. And what we may be reminded sometimes of people who think, oh, that's really easy. I just get a moment's association and come in, go out, now I'm saved. I don't have to do anything else. I can break all the principles and whatever, you know. I can. Sometimes certain forms of Christianity have this form. I've accepted Jesus in my heart as my personal Savior, and now it doesn't matter what I do, I'm saved, and so on. It seems like a very cheap thing. So Prabhupada has, I think, what amounts to a discussion of this matter, how one receives the mercy of a great devotee. Here, Prabhupada is commenting on another statement where Krishna says, "How to understand knowledge? Tat vidhi pranipatena." Tat means knowledge. That's been discussed. Knowledge of sacrifice, which leads to the absolute truth. Tat vidhi, to know that, one has to approach
as someone by three things: a spiritual master, by Pranipat, Pariprashna, and Seva. Pranipat means to fall down before. That's the dust place. Pranipat. Right. Means to fall before, like Dandabat. Pariprash, by questions, by serious desire to know. And Seva, by performing service or worship. He says here that those people who are tattva-darshinis are able to, in this way, initiate one or enlighten one as to the truth. So here Prabhupada says that that this is a necessity, that one has to approach a spiritual master in the disciplic succession. In other words, if it is coming in this way, one has to get it from somebody who has similarly gotten the truth in the same way. Until we trace it back to the process having descended from Krishna. So again, what won't work, huh? Mental speculation or dry argument cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender. And one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant. Bhagavatam says dasavat, like a dasa. Dasa means a menial servant. Without false prestige. And then he says, satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Now we're going to discuss a little bit, what is this thing called mercy? Because, okay, somebody has some knowledge, that person speaks it, I sit in the classroom and I get to listen to what he says, I learn it, I've got it. Now this week we are familiar with this process of learning. We all have had teachers, we all have gone to school, and we have sat there with somebody who knows something more than I do, and they explain it and I learn it. So that's a normal process. Where's this? What's this emphasis on mercy? Some extra zap or something? So what are we talking about here? But here he says, satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. So here, that's, inquiries are normally, you know, part of the process of learning. You raise your hand and what about this, what about that, and the teacher explains some more. Sometimes we do a little submission and service. We bring an apple to the teacher as the tradition and hope that it'll help us get a good grade. Or I stay behind and clean the blackboard, the chalkboard. Like that. That's not really the central part of the process. More like bribery, but here, this is essential. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. And then he has this very interesting sentence. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. Okay, so some blessing takes place, by which
by which enlightenment occurs. And he mentions, first of all, the test of the spiritual master. Now, what is that test that one has to pass? Of course, what we have to do. Well, let's go back. Even if you look at an ordinary, mundane, the process of knowledge, there is even an element of mercy or built into it. One has to have a good teacher, have had a good teacher in some subject matter, to really realize this. And this has happened to me on a couple of occasions in material education. One gets a really good teacher, really, really knows the subject and loves it and wants to teach it. There are many teachers who don't know the subject, and if they do know it, they don't love it, and they don't care whether you learn it or not. Unfortunately, they just have a job. But once in a while, you get a real teacher. And usually, if you spent, like I have, 20 years of school, you run across one or two, if you're lucky. And that's quite an experience. Not even so much for what you learn about the subject matter, but what you learn about the process of knowledge itself and how it goes and what it means to master a subject and what it means to learn any subject. So if you happen to have a really good teacher, even in the material world, and if you happen to become really interested in that subject yourself and show to the teacher your interest, that teacher becomes really happy. And that teacher will automatically spend extra time and effort to explain it. And especially if you really spend a course of study with such a teacher, you'll get a glimpse of how they know it, how that teacher knows it and masters. And such teachers who are masters of a subject, they kind of have a secret. It's hard to say it, what it is, but somehow or other, in the course of a good relationship, you see it. You almost see the secret of their understanding. And the other thing is you get inspired. You want to become like it. You want to learn it too. This happens sometimes. Even if you're learning a musical instrument with somebody who's really a master, or even academic subject matter where somebody's really has learned it, so there actually is an element of this in the student-teacher relationship, and that's why really. If you look in India, what we describe as the guru-disciple relationship for understanding transcendental knowledge, actually you find that that's there if you want to learn anything. you want to learn sarangi or sitar, traditionally in India. You worship your guru, your music teacher. And you do the same thing, just for something material. Because actually, this guru-disciple relationship is really simply the conditions under which any knowledge can be effectively taught. That's a fact. Because there's always this element of a relationship where the teacher loves the subject and wants to teach and finds somebody who really wants to learn. There's some spark that happens. And you learn things that you simply cannot learn by memorizing and so on. So this is a fact. So even more so, when it comes to spiritual knowledge and when it comes to devotional service. We just should understand that. Unfortunately, in the West, the teacher-student relationships are so degraded. But even when I was a child, you used to respect teachers. And even in the classroom, the teacher would come in the room, you would stand up out of respect. You wouldn't do like this, but you would stand up and... But that's all gone to hell now. It's just finished. And you think the teachers are idiots and they don't know anything. And they can't teach you anything. So we very few people really are fortunate to have the experience of a really good teacher, a great teacher, and becoming a good student of that kind of thing. We don't need to go on about that. So here in the process of devotional service, this also applies. One really has to want to know. That's a requirement. Have to be eager to learn from the spiritual master, and then one shows one's eagerness. That has to be demonstrated. And especially with the spiritual master, it's not just teaching some art or craft or a theoretical thing. This is the representative of Krishna. Again, let me just go back. Really, anyone who's a teacher is a representative. In the Vedic context, even if you were learning something mundane, the teacher was a representative in a line of teachers, and it always went back to somebody. A demigod or somewhere. There was always a notion that some skill or craft was passed down, and the teacher was always representing something more than just oneself. Again, all this is deteriorated nowadays. But here, in devotional service, you have somebody who is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is necessary to show that you are accepting this person as the representative of God. So therefore, this requirement is there of discipleship, of what we call discipleship. That is, of accepting the position of obedience and discipline. It's not that I do nothing. Because I have to show I'm interested. If I'm not interested, then how will there be any mercy? So that eagerness to learn, and that eagerness to obey, that needs to be shown. So following the orders is not just a mechanical thing. It's the evidence of love. Because when you love somebody, you want to please them. You want to do something that will make them happy. Prabhupada once said, actually, in a lecture, he said, "Where's the proof that you love Krishna?" That's what he said. Where's the proof? Because we have known so many people love Krishna. We go to India, everybody loves Krishna. But Prabhupada said, "Where's the proof?" Well, that sounds a little rough. Proof? Love is love. People said, "I'm out of love." Where's the proof? And then then Prabhupada said, if you love Krishna, you will follow his orders. That's as simple as that. That's the proof. Otherwise, I may say love, I may even think it's love, but it's not. It's some sentiment. But love, there's action, you do it. If you love somebody, you'll knock yourself out for them. A mother loves her children, she really puts herself through hell for the sake of her children. She may say, I love my children, but I don't know where they are. You know, little brats are out wandering around somewhere. You know, then you have to say there's some deficiency there. So Prabhupada asks the same thing. Where's the proof? So satisfaction of the self, realized spiritual master, is the secret of advancement. So one thing about satisfaction, inquiry and submission. The submission is there because I've approached the spiritual master as somebody who knows. And as soon as the spiritual master tells me something and I start to argue, like, if you don't think I know it, why come to me? In a material subject matter, we always assume the teacher is ignorant. And he has an opinion, but it's just another opinion, and so we argue with him sometimes. But really, if you don't think somebody knows, why bother to study? In any honest process of knowledge, it's some submission to a teacher. Teacher means one who knows. There was this encounter Srila Prabhupada had at my temple with the professor I brought to see him. This professor in my religion department, an Indian fellow, Professor Yadav. Prabhupada said to him, what do you teach? And Yadav said, Hinduism. And Prabhupada said, and what is that Hinduism? And Yadav says, I don't know. And Prabhupada said, what? He said, you are teaching and you do not know? And Yadav says, yes, I do not know. And he had his own theory of what he was saying. I don't know what it is. This was really, you talk about getting off on the wrong foot with Srila Prabhupada. You couldn't do any better than the Vibhuti Yadav did. So Prabhupada, he just got still for a minute. And then he said, here is our Swarup Dhammada. He is also a PhD scientist. Let us ask his opinion. He is teaching and he does not know. What do you think of that? And Swarup Dhammada said on cue, cheater, Srila Prabhupada, that is called cheater. So his Prabhupada saw it. That is cheater. If you do not know how you can teach. And then, you know, Yadav got angry and he went on there. Quite a dynamic exchange. But Prabhupada said, you do not know, how can you teach? So a lot of times we have professors like that who say, I'm your teacher, but I don't know anything. So, this is not very productive. You wonder, how much am I paying to go to this school? So the idea that spiritual master, the teacher, actually knows, there's submissive and service. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. So what is that test? Well, Prabhupada says in the next line, when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple. So there's some to see the genuine desire. The genuine desire to advance in Krishna consciousness, the genuine desire to surrender to Krishna. I really want to do this. Because we may come with the idea, yes, I want to become. Because we are being trained to be pure devotees, I want to become a pure devotee. Pure devotee, we know the definition. We've already read it. Anya adilasita shunyam jnana karma dhyana vitaham. So I have to be willing to show my commitment to this path. It is not from the beginning I have to be pure. Of course not. But I have to show my commitment to this path. So there's a test. Do you really want this? Are you sure you wouldn't rather be somewhere else? So when he sees that the devotee is sincere, Prabhupada uses these two words altogether, together, sincere and serious. That requirement is there, that sincere and serious. Then Prabhupada uses this word, automatic. He automatic means it just comes. Because he wants to give Krishna consciousness to people. He wants to give them this. So he blesses the disciple. Now, what is a blessing? This additional thing called the blessing. I mean, to take the time and the effort and explain things, that's already mercy. To make it clear. But then when the sees he really wants to know, and something else happens. We see in Vedic culture all the time, great sages, they bless and they curse. In fact, every day we go through the day, we use it as a blessing, and curses go around. In America, you buy something at the store, the person behind the counter says, "Have a nice day." Right, that's a blessing. And you get in your car and you start, you don't look in the rearview mirror, and somebody brake screech, and you hear somebody scream, "Go to hell!" You've been cursed, right? But the girl behind the counter says, "Have a nice day." You don't have a nice day. It doesn't do anything, right? And the guy in the car behind you, he says, "Go to hell." Doesn't mean you go to hell. So people are blessing and cursing, but it's not effective. But in the Vedas, some great sage says, "Have a nice day." You have a nice day. Even in Sanskrit, there's a whole set of verb endings just for giving blessings. There's this benedictive mode, I guess, called benedictive mode, like the optative. And there's the benedictive just for giving blessings. You know, may you, or the opposite. So when Durvasa Muni or somebody would say, "Bless you, you know, your life was made." And if he cursed you, there's nothing you could do. It would follow you around birth after birth sometimes until it was lifted. So there's that power there. They attained through austerities, penances, and so on, somehow or other. I'm not quite sure even how that works with these outside of the devotional context, but somehow or other they get this power. Or maybe it's also through devotion. I mean, Durvasa Muni was also a disciple of Lord Shiva, and so on. So there was something, some higher. Because somehow or other you have to be empowered by someone to do this. But in Krishna consciousness context, it becomes very clear why benedictions from a spiritual master work. Because here is somebody who has become a devotee of Krishna and has pleased Krishna, has rendered service to Krishna without asking for anything in return. He's proven to Krishna and proven to his spiritual master, which is the same thing, that actually I want to do service and I do not want anything in exchange. In other words, it is love. As soon as I want something back, it's business. But as soon as I just do something without wanting anything in exchange, and if I get something back, becoming really upset and embarrassed and try to do more, then you're in the realm of love. So Krishna himself ultimately becomes purchased by and controlled by such love. He's described, one of his characteristics is described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is Prema Vashaha, controlled by the love of his devotees. There's the famous place in the Bhagavatam when he says to the gopis, "You've beaten me. Your service to me, your devotion to me is so great that there's nothing I can do to pay you back." So Krishna becomes, he's controlled by the love of his devotees. This is one reason that's given why pure devotional service is very rare, because Krishna doesn't give it away, because he comes under the control of the love of his devotees. So when somebody has passed the test of his spiritual master, or shown that Krishna, this love, when that devotee wants something, Krishna gives it. Now, a great devotee doesn't want anything for himself, but he wants something for others, because a devotee is paradukha-dukhi. He suffers when he sees that others are suffering. So this is what happened. When one sees that here is somebody serious, automatically the spiritual master says, "Krishna, please bless this person." And Krishna does it. So the blessings actually ultimately flow through Krishna, through the devotee. And therefore Krishna is in the heart and he enlightens the devotee. Otherwise it cannot be forced. It has to come from Krishna. But Krishna gives it when he sees that his devotees are satisfied. That's my understanding. But you see somebody like Prabhupada's understanding of this was that one had to always remain the servant of the spiritual master. And that becoming the servant of the spiritual master was not a temporary condition. It's permanent. It's a permanent condition. And that success in spiritual life simply comes from taking the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. This is Prabhupada's big, as he describes, his breakthrough understanding when he was given an order by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that was astonishing and almost seemed impossible, that he should go to the West. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had given that order to his prominent sannyasi leaders quite liberally to them. Sannyas being this facility to travel and preach. So there were people within the Gaudiya Math who were leaders of the organization that would go to the West and preach. The whole Gaudiya Math was meant for preaching. And then when Prabhupada asked, when he was doing business in Bombay and during his household life, "Is there anything I can do to please you?" Bhaktisiddhanta gave him the same order. And Prabhupada was just astonished. "How can I ever do this? Here I am in Bombay doing business. Why me?" But then Prabhupada said he got inspiration from reading this purport to the Vyavasa Atmika Bhuti verse by Vishwanath Chakravarti, that one should take the order of the spiritual master as one's heart and soul, serve it totally, and don't worry about success or failure, don't worry about being liberated or not liberated, just do that. So Prabhupada began to do it. And he says that this is how he ended up in America. Because he certainly came without any facility or preparation
of a financial or institutional kind, but he just simply determined he was going to do it and did everything he could. So he was successful. So you can say that Prabhupada passed the test. Bhaktisiddhanta says, what he talked, he passed the test. He took this order very seriously, and then encountered one after another obstacle and frustration and difficulty, and with no facility, and he just stuck to it anyway. Well, when Prabhupada got to America, he was looking to see when the boat was going to go back to India. He did not, was not at all thinking that everything is going to turn out successful. He was just going to follow this order. He was going to do everything he could. And of course it did turn out successful. So, and this is, he said, this is the mercy of my spiritual master. So other people may have received the order, but they did not take it quite so seriously. They may have had more facility and more opportunity. They didn't do it. So here's somebody like Prabhupada who has, in this way, shown us what it means in a very vivid, big way to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he's done something like this, Krishna is really very pleased. And his servant, Bhaktisiddhanta, says what he taught, who is pleased. And so when somebody like Prabhupada says, this is my theory of how the Krishna consciousness movement spread to the West. I mean, Prabhupada was here, and instead of having the kind of high class people he was expecting or hoping for, he had young people off the streets wearing blue jeans they hadn't washed in a month, with long hair and smelling of marijuana and so on, and but they chanted and I think Prabhupada just said to Krishna, please make these people Krishna conscious. And Krishna says, hey, you know they're not qualified, look at them. And Prabhupada said, yeah, I know, but I want that anyway. Something like that, huh? So we have to show, like Prabhupada showed, that we are serious. We must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And then, so that he sees that there's genuine desire. It's not just a fashion or a convenience or because I want a spiritual name or so on. But when he sees the genuine desire, the real desire, it's solid, then automatically, It just comes spontaneously. There's no calculation. He blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. This is what takes place. And Prabhupada remarks here in the beginning of the purport of today's verse, actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. So the word there is anyone. There is no, I may have so many disqualifications, but if the actual demonstration of sincerity and seriousness is there, then that's the qualification that's needed. I have to show something. And then I will make a serious and earnest attempt to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. It may be harder or easier, depending on the past karma and the background and so on, but nevertheless, if the sincere determination is shown, then everything can happen. So this is what's meant, that kind of a service is really what's meant by this Mahat Padaraja Abhishekam, receiving the blessings of the that comes from the
serving at the feet of the great devotees. Okay, any questions or comments about this topic?
I had a question during class, but in the end you came back to the verse, so it actually wasn't my question. You could elaborate a little more about, you know, this Abhishek, you know, in the dust of the lotus feet. But you got a new person, like, you know, we hear it so much and we have to take the dust from the lotus feet and sponge from us. So a new person might think, well, this is like, you know, this is well, this is to be done, and you have to go and take it.
Mm. Yeah, these days of shoes and socks in these countries of shoes and socks, it's a little hard to do. In India, where everybody's going around barefoot and it's dusty, you know. but of course, so. It does refer to an actual physical activity. That is to say, falling down, pranipat, falling down before like this and touching the feet where the dust is there. People take that dust and put it on their head. You know? I mean, this is a physical activity that takes place in India. But of course, people do that now and they don't really mean it. You know, in India, you find people are perfectly capable of going to somebody and doing like that, and then stealing his money. It's a little breathtaking, but it happens quite frequently, and they're sincere in both activities. It's a more breathtaking thing. So, but it refers also that the mentality has to be there, of humility, of seeking the blessing and seeking the grace and falling down before. I mean, to some extent, still in the West, we do offer dandavats and obeisances. That's a little shocking to people, especially from Protestant countries. But devotional service really means you act things out with your body. And by acting it out with your body, you express it, and also you can become humble that way. It's not that I have to wait to become humble before bowing down. I can want to become humble, and then by bowing down, that humility will become real. And that's not hypocrisy. I can admit I'm a proud, arrogant rascal. I know that. But still, in order to train myself in humility, I bow down. I offer dandavats. That's just, and gradually you learn. But by doing this, you go through the motions, and then the emotion comes from the motion too. So this is a practical technique of doing things, of learning things, and you acquire a habit that way. Yeah, so that I think that's what it's meant, is having this pranipat. You may not always be able to find dust and so on. If you happen to be in the right place at the right time, dust is there, but mentally, if it's not physically possible, I should do this. Okay? Anything to add to that?
No, I just want to hear from
you. Okay. Anything else? Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I had some experience earlier when I was at school.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you've had an experience like that. Huh? How to what?
How
How can you get it now, you mean? Well, how did it happen the last time?
The last time, like a fruit, I think that I could somehow satisfy with my senses with it, you know?
Oh, yeah?
I got something out of it. The Vishnu stuff is meant to be like.
Dry.
What?
Dry.
Devotional service.
Before there was some sense gratification of the goal.
Yeah, now Krishna causes no sense gratification. Yeah. There is sense gratification. You have to be interested in Krishna's sense gratification. But before I was interested in my sense gratification, now I have to sense gratification is always the goal. But spiritual life means Krishna's sense gratification. I have to want to satisfy Krishna. If you didn't want to do that, you wouldn't be here at all. So there's some desire. But sometimes there's a conflict. There's my sense gratification and Krishna's sense gratification. So then I have to be very interested in getting free from the obsession with my own sense gratification. And understanding that if Krishna's senses are satisfied, then automatically I become satisfied. We have to know that. But we have to practice like that. And we have to be trying very sincerely. We have to be chanting the Hare Krishna mantra while trying to give up offenses. By doing this, actually we will be connected with the internal potency. We may not see so much of Krishna, but we will have the inspiration to continue. If the inspiration to continue is fading or going away, then that's due to offenses. And so then I have to look to see how that there must be some offenses there. And I must correct it. Now, I may not know what my offense is exactly. Sometimes I keep myself ignorant of what I'm doing. Just so I won't know. So I may not know what my offenses are. So the safe course is assume I'm breaking all of the, committing all of them. But then the place to start, Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us, in Harinam Chintamani, that he says that inattentiveness, pramadaha, while chanting, this inattentiveness is the breeding ground, the fertile field in which all the other offenses grow, and that if we're not trying to become free from inattentiveness, then we will not be able to become free from other offenses. So this is a nice piece of information. So that first of all, when I'm chanting my japa, I have to show Krishna that I'm interested in being interested in him. I may not be interested in Krishna because my mind goes away, even though he's there in his holy name. But I'm interested in being interested because when it goes away, I bring it back. Though I show Krishna that I'm chanting his holy name and my mind goes away, it's very regrettable that my mind go away. There must be some terrible thing. I've done so many lives to have my mind go away from Krishna. I went away from Krishna. I'm here in this material world. So let me show Krishna I want to come back. Then whenever my attention wanders, I bring it back. And this is chanting on the clearing stage. And if we do like that, especially while we're chanting our 16 rounds, and this proving to Krishna, proving to the spiritual master that I have a sincere desire, then also whatever other offenses I may be committing, then I'll start to understand what that is, and I'll be following the process. And the spark will be there. That's my understanding. Most of us have been through times of spark and no spark and on and off spark again. So gradually we can see what the problem is and how to fix it. Yeah.
Any way recommended for everybody to serve Krishna? Whatever the desire is. So then maybe the father desires in the end.
Yeah.
To get inspiration from.
Yeah, we shall read.
So anyway,
sure.
Go
yeah. Yeah, but if I want to progress on this path, for example, one offense against the holy name is to maintain material desires. Now, notice the offense is not to have them; that's just our unfortunate condition. But that's not an offense. That's just the given starting conditions. But if I maintain material desires, then that's an offense. What does it mean to maintain them? That I say to Krishna, please give me pure devotional service and satisfy this material desire. I have to chant and say, please free me from this desire. I have this material desire, it's very strong, it's very obstinate. Please help me become free from this material desire, because I know that as long as I have this attachment, I will not be able to love you. And by the way, that's to maintain material desires is considered to be another way of saying not have complete faith in the holy name. Faith is that if I attain Krishna consciousness through chanting of the holy names, as Chaitanya Charitamrita says, sarva karma kritta hoy, everything else will be accomplished. So I should have this conviction that if I dedicate all, everything, my only desire is to serve the holy name as directed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I should have full confidence that I will not be lacking in any area of life. Full satisfaction. But if I'm afraid that, I'll serve the holy name and I'll get the benedictions of the holy name, but maybe I'll be poor. So I also want money. Well, I should have the conviction that Krishna will take care of the money thing. And he'll give me what I need. I don't have to worry about it. It's like that. Right? So we should have this faith in the holy name. If I don't have this faith, what do I do? Prabhupada says faith is created by associating with devotees. Presumably we mean that devotees that have more faith than I do. So I have to like somebody like that. I just be with that, those people. Then to not. Will increase. Okay. Anything else? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.